That night in the bunkhouse, Pearly woke up in the middle of the night. When he awoke, he saw Cal sitting at the window, just staring outside.
Damn, Cal, what time is it?
I don't know. Sometime after midnight, I reckon.
What you doing up?
Can't sleep.
You're thinking about Smoke, ain't you?
Yeah.
Smoke will be all right. He can take care of himself. You know that.
Yeah, I know it.
And you'll find out who done this and get that set right, too.
Unless he...
Unless what?
Pearly, have you stopped to think that maybe Smoke, that... Maybe he...
Did it?
Cal nodded his head, but he said nothing. His eyes were wide, worried, and shining in the moonlight.
Cal, believe me, I've known Smoke longer than you have. He did not rob that bank, and he did not kill that banker.
I mean, if he did, why? I wouldn't think no less of him. What with the winter we just come through, and the danger of him maybe losing Sugarloaf and all.
He didn't do it.
How can you be so sure?
I told you how I can be so sure. It's because I know him.
Pearly, you know how I come to be here, don't you? I mean, how I tried to rob Miss Sally that time. If it had been anyone else but her, I would have probably got away with it. And there's no telling where I'd be now. Might even be a bank robber. But I ain't, because she took me in.
Yes, I know that.
The point is, I ain't a thief. I mean, I ain't no normal thief, but I was pretty desperate then. So I done something I never thought I would do. I could see how Smoke might do the same thing if he thought he had to.
All right, Cal. You want me to tell you how I know he didn't do this?
Yes.
It's easy. The sheriff said there were 6 of them robbed the bank, right?
Right.
Well, if Smoke was going to rob a bank, he wouldn't need no 5 other men to help him get the job done. He would have done it alone.
Cal paused for a moment. Then he broke into a big smile.
Well, that's right. He would have done it alone, wouldn't he? I mean, Smoke, there ain't no way he would need anyone else to help him do a little thing like rob a bank.
You satisfied now?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Smoke didn't rob that bank.
So you'll go to bed now and let me get some sleep?
Yeah. Good night, Pearly.
Night, Cal.
It was just growing dark when Smoke rode into the little town of Dorena. He passed by a little cluster of houses that sat just on the edge of town, and as he came alongside them, he could smell the aroma of someone frying chicken. That reminded him he was hungry, not having eaten anything for the entire day. Smoke had never been in Dorena before, but he had been in dozens of towns just like it, so there was a familiarity as he rode down the street, checking out the false-fronted buildings, the leather goods store, the mercantile, a gun shop, a feed store, apothecary, and the saloon. The saloon was called Big Kate's, and when Smoke stopped in front of it, he reached down into the bottom of his saddlebag, moved a leather flap to one side, and found what he was looking for. He had put $100 in the saddlebag before he left Sugarloaf, keeping it in a way that a casual examination of the pouch wouldn't find it. Fortunately, it had escaped detection when he was arrested, and his horse and saddle were taken. The smell of bacon told him that Big Kate's offered an opportunity for supper, so he went inside. One of the amenities the customers could enjoy at Big Kate's was a friendly game of cards. On the wall, there was a sign that read, "This is an honest gambling establishment. Please report any cheating to the management." In addition to the self-righteous claim of gambling integrity, the walls were also decorated with animal heads and pictures, including one of a reclining nude woman. There was no gilt-edged mirror, but there was an ample supply of decent whiskey and several large jars of pickled eggs and sausages placed in convenient locations. From a preliminary observation, Big Kate's definitely appeared to be more than just a saloon. It was filled with working girls who all seemed to be attending to business. Smoke saw one of the girls taking a cowboy up the stairs with him. The upstairs area didn't extend all the way to the front of the building. The main room, or saloon, was big, with exposed rafters below the high, peaked ceilings. There was a score of customers present, standing at the bar talking with the girls and drinking, or sitting at the tables playing cards. A large and very bosomy woman came over to greet Smoke.
Welcome to Big Kate's. I don't believe I've seen you before. Are you new in town?
I am. I take it that you are Kate?
Oh, it's okay, honey. You can call me Big. Hell, I got Mills and I ain't blind. Now, can I get you something to drink?
Yes.
Wine, beer, or whiskey?
Beer, and something to eat if you got it.
Beans and bacon is about it. And cornbread.
That'll be fine.
Ebenezer Dooley had stepped out through the back door to the outhouse to relieve himself. He was just coming back in when he saw Smoke Jensen talking with Big Kate.
What the hell? How the hell did he get out of jail?
Dooley backed out of the saloon before he was seen. Smoke ate his supper, then seeing a seat open up and a card game that was in progress, he took the rest of his beer over to the table.
You gents mind if I sit in?
We don't mind at all. Please, be our guest. The more money there is in the game, the better it is, I say.
Thanks.
Some might have thought it strange for a Smoke to play a game of cards under the circumstances. The circumstances being that he was a man on the run. But he was also a man on the hunt. And he had learned long ago that the best way to get information was in casual conversation, rather than by direct questioning of people. He knew that when someone started questioning people, seriously questioning them, the natural thing for them to do was to either be very evasive with their responses or not say anything at all. Smoke had already drawn his first hand when he noticed the badge on the shirt of one of the other men who was playing.
You sheriff?
Deputy. Name is Clayton. Gideon Clayton. And you?
Kirby. Bill Kirby.
For a moment, Smoke felt a sense of apprehension, and part of him wanted to just get up and leave. But he knew that doing something like that would create quite a bit of suspicion. On the other hand, with Deputy Clayton being here, he might learn right away if any telegraph messages of his escape had reached the sheriff's office. But when Deputy Clayton made no move toward him, nor gave any indication of being suspicious of him, Smoke knew that for now, he was safe to continue his search. To the casual observer, it might appear that Smoke was so relaxed as to be off guard. But that was not the case. His eyes were constantly flicking about, monitoring the room for any danger. And though he was engaged in convivial conversation with others at the table, he was listening in on snatches of dozens of other conversations.
I believe it is your bet.
Smoke missed the challenge when it was first issued because he was looking around the room to see if he could spot any familiar faces.
Hey, Kirby.
I beg your pardon?
I said, I believe it is your bet.
Oh, thank you.
Smoke looked at the pot, then down at his hand. He was showing one jack and two sixes. His down card was another jack. He had hoped to fill a full house with his last card, but he pulled a three instead.
Well?
Smoke could see why Clayton was anxious. The deputy had three queens showing.
I fold.
Two of the other players folded as well, and two stayed. But the three queens won the pot.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. Thank you.
Clayton raked in his winnings.
Deputy Clayton, you have been uncommonly lucky tonight.
Smoke had gathered from the conversation around the table that the one speaking was Doc McGuire.
I'll see. Have one near a month's pay just sitting here right at this table.
Where are you from, Mr. Kirby?
Down in La Plata County.
You folks have a hard winter down there?
Yes, very hard.
I was reading in an article in the Denver paper a few weeks ago. According to the article, this was the worst winter ever. And it was all over the West. Hundreds of thousands of cows were lost.
It was a bad one, all right. Some folks think the bad weather only hurts the farmers and ranchers, but I can tell you as a merchant that it hurts us too. If the farmers and ranchers don't have any money to spend, well, we can't sell any of our goods.
I reckon it was the winter that made those folks hold up the bank over in Etna.
There's a bank robbery in Etna? Well, I hadn't heard of that.
Yeah, we didn't get word on it till yesterday. Six of them held up the bank and killed the banker.
They killed the banker? Wait, I know that banker. His name is Clark, I think.
Yeah, Rob Clark. But I understand they caught one of the ones who did it.
Good! I hope they hang the bastard. From what I knew of him, Clark was a good man.
Oh, I expect the fellow that killed him is already hung by now.
You haven't heard anything of any of the others, have you?
Nope. Far as I know, they're still on the run.
Smoke won the next hand, which brought him back to even. And the way the cards were falling, he decided he'd better stop now. When Clayton started to deal, Smoke waved him away.
Wait, hey, are you out?
Yeah. I better quit while I have enough money left to pay for my hotel room. I appreciate the game, gentlemen. But the cards haven't been that kind to me tonight. Think I'll just have a couple of drinks, then turn in.
Ebenezer Dooley was standing just across the street from the saloon, tucked into the shadows of the space between Lair's furniture and Latham's feed and seed stores. He'd been there for just over an hour when he saw Smoke step outside.
Well now, Mr. Jensen, it's time I settled a score with you once and for all.
Dooley pulled his pistol and pointed it. But just as he did so, a wagon passed between him and Smoke. By the time the wagon had cleared, he saw Smoke going into the hotel.
Damn.
Smoke went into the hotel and rented a room, number 5 on the upstairs level. The stairs were bare wood, but the upstairs hallway was covered with a rose-colored carpet. The hallway was illuminated by wall-sconce lanterns that glowed dimly with low-burning flames, putting out just enough light to allow him to see where he was going. The number 5 was tilted to one side, but Smoke didn't have any difficulty making it out. He unlocked the door and then he went inside. The room was dark, illuminated only by the fact that he'd left the door open and some light spilled in from the hall. He saw a kerosene lamp on the bedside table, as well as several matches. Dooley was frustrated that Smoke had managed to go into the hotel before he was able to take a shot at him. He put his pistol back in his holster while he contemplated what to do next. Dooley had a room in the hotel himself. Maybe the best thing to do would be to wait until much later, then sneak down the hall into Smoke's room and kill him in the middle of the night. Dooley had just about decided to go back to the saloon and have a few drinks while he was waiting, when he saw a lantern light up in one of the windows facing the street on the second floor of the hotel. That had to be Smoke Jensen. As it so happened, the stable was just across the street from the hotel. So Dooley ran back to the alley, then down to the stable, coming in through the back door. Going to the stall where his horse was boarded and saddle weighted, he snaked his rifle from the saddle holster. Then, with rifle in hand, climbed into the hayloft and hurried to the front to look across the street into the hotel. He smiled broadly when he saw that the shade was up and the lantern was lit. Just as he had thought it would be, the occupant of the room was Smoke Jensen. He had an excellent view from the hayloft. It was a little stuffy in the room, so Smoke walked over to the window, then raised it to catch the night breeze. That was when he saw a sudden flash of light in the hayloft over the livery across the street. Instinctively, Smoke knew that he was seeing a muzzle flash even before he heard the gun report. Because of that, he was already pulling away from the window even as the bullet was crashing through the glass and slamming into the wall on the opposite side of the room. Smoke cursed himself for the foolish way he had exposed himself at the window. He knew better. He had let his guard down. He reached up to extinguish the lantern, and as he did so, a second shot came crashing through the window. He extinguished the lamp, and the room grew dark.
Damn!
Dooley jacked another round into the chamber of his rifle, and he stared across the street into the open but now dark window of Smoke Jensen's room. Dooley was very quiet, very still, and very observant for a long time, and it paid off. He saw the top of Jensen's head appear just above the windowsill. Dooley had not expected Jensen to return fire. For one thing, Dooley was well back into the loft, so he was convinced he couldn't be seen at all. He hadn't counted on Jensen being able to use the muzzle flash of his rifle to locate his position. The bullet from Jensen's pistol clipped just a little piece of his ear.
You son of a bitch!
Get off the street! Everybody get off the street! Everybody get inside!
Smoke recognized the voice. It belonged to Deputy Clayton, the man he had been playing cards with but a few minutes earlier. On his hands and knees so as not to present a target, Smoke crept up to the open window and looked out again. He saw the deputy running up the street.
Clayton! Stay away! Clayton, no! Get back!
Smoke's warning was not heeded.
Ow.
A third volley was fired from the livery hayloft, and Clayton fell face down in the street. With his pistol in hand, Smoke climbed out the window, scrambled to the edge of the porch, then dropped down onto the street. Running to Clayton's still form, he bent down to check on him. Clayton had been hit hard.
Damn it, Clayton. I told you to get down.
It was my job. He's still up there.
Yeah, I know.
Taking Clayton's pistol and sticking it down in his belt, Smoke ran to the water trough nearest the livery, diving just behind it as the man in the livery fired again. Smoke got up and ran toward the door of the livery. Smoke shot two more times to keep the shooter back. Then, when he reached the big open double doors of the livery, he ran on through them so that he was inside. Once inside, he moved quietly through the barn, looking up at the hayloft just overhead. Suddenly, he felt little pieces of straw falling on him, and he stopped because he realized that someone had to be right over him. Smoke was rewarded only with a shower of more bits and pieces of straw.
That's six shots. You're out of bullets, you son of a bitch.
Smoke looked over to his left to see a man standing in the open on the edge of the loft. It was one of the bank robbers.
Well, if it isn't the pockmarked, droopy-eyed son of a bitch who set me up.
How the hell did you get out of jail, Jensen? I figured they'd have hung you by now. I must confess that I was some surprised when I seen you come in the saloon tonight.
You're gonna shoot me, are you?
Seems like the logical thing to do, don't you think?
What's your name?
What do you need to know my name for?
I don't know. Maybe because I'd like to know the name of the man that wants to kill me.
It ain't just wanting to, Jensen. I'm going to kill you. And to satisfy your curiosity, my name is Dooley. Ebenezer Dooley.
Since you're in a sharing mood, Mr. Dooley, where are the others?
Oh, you got some sand, Jensen. Worrying about where the others are when I'm fixing to shoot you dead.
Where are they?
I don't know where they all went. But the Logan brothers was going to Bertrand. Not that it'll matter to you. You got your prayers, now's the time to say them.
Slowly and deliberately, the outlaw raised his rifle to his shoulder to take aim. Smoke raised his pistol and fired. Dooley got a surprised look on his face, and he reached down and clasped his hands over the wound in his chest. He fell forward, tumbling over once in the air and then landing on his back in a pile of straw in the stall right under him.
How did you do that? I counted six shots.
This is the deputy's gun. I borrowed it before I ran in here.
I'll be gone to hell.
I expect you will.
Smoke saw that one of the horses was pretty agitated, and he petted it on the neck to try and calm it down.
I'll be damned. No wonder you're upset. You're his horse, aren't you?
The horse continued to show its agitation.
Don't worry, I'm not going to shoot you. You can't help it because your owner was such a bastard.
The Smoke continued to try and calm the horse. He saw a $20 bill lying in the straw over by the edge of the stall, just under the saddle.
Hello, what's this?
Leaving the horse, Smoke went over to retrieve the bill. That's when he saw another bill sticking out of the rifle sheath. Smoke stuck his hand down into the rifle holster and felt a cloth bag. Pulling the bag out, he saw that it was marked Bank of Etna. There were five packets of bills in the bag, each packet wrapped by a band that said $1,000. Four of the packets were full, and one was partially full. Smoke looked back toward the door of the stable to make certain that he wasn't being watched. Then he took the money bundles from the bag and stuck them inside his shirt. After that, he stuffed the empty bag back down into the rifle boot. Then he walked out into the street. The street was still empty.
It's all right. The shooter's dead. Someone get Doc McGuire to come have a look at the deputy.
At his call, several people began appearing from inside the various buildings and houses that fronted the street. One of the first to show up was Doc McGuire, carrying his bag. He hurried to the side of the fallen deputy. Kneeling beside the deputy, Doc McGuire put his stethoscope to the young man's chest. He listened for a moment. Then, with his face glum, he shook his head. Clayton was dead. One of the others to hurry to the scene was the sheriff. The sheriff, who had just gotten out of bed, was still tucking his shirt into his trousers as he came up. His badge gleamed in the moonlight.
Damn. Anybody know who did this?
His name was Dooley. Ebenezer Dooley. And you'll find him in the barn.
In the barn?
It's all right. He's dead.
Did you kill him?
Yes.
And who might you be?
The name's Kirby. Bill Kirby.
Well, tell me, Kirby. Did you have a personal grudge with this fella?
No.
And how come it was that you and him got into a shooting war?
You'd have to ask Dooley that, Sheriff. He's the one that started the shooting.
Did you know this man?
No.
And how'd you know his name was Dooley?
He told me his name before he died.
Seems to me like I've heard that name before. Maybe a wanted poster on him. You a bounty hunter?
I'm not a bounty hunter. I just happened to be here when all this started happening.
Mr. Kirby, would you be willing to stop by my office tomorrow and answer a few questions for me?
I don't mind.
In the meantime, some of you fellows would get these bodies over to the undertaker. I'll go see Miss Clayton. Tell her about her husband. I'd rather take a beating than do that.
When Smoke went up to his room, he took the money out of his shirt, counted it, then put it in his saddlebags. He counted $4,910, which was nearly half of what had been stolen. He wasn't exactly sure how he was going to handle it, but he had it in his mind that somehow returning the money might help him prove his innocence. After the money was divided, the five remaining bank robbers went their separate ways. Dooley went off by himself, but the Logan brothers left together, and so did Fargo Masters and Ford DeLorean, who were first cousins. Ford was relieving himself while Fargo remained mounted, his leg hooked around the saddle horn.
Hey, Fargo, you know what I've been thinking?
I didn't even know you could think, let alone what you were thinking.
I'm thinking it don't do no good to have this here money if we ain't got no place to spend it.
Oh, yeah? I've give that a little thought myself.
So, how about we go into the next town and spend a little of this here money?
Ooh, sounds fine by me. Where is the closest town?
Closest town is Dorena, but we can't go there.
Why not?
Because that's where Dooley was going.
So?
I thought he said it wouldn't be good for us all to go to the same place.
We won't all be in the same place, just you, me, and Dooley.
Yeah, you're right. Ain't no reason he gets to go to the closest town and we got to ride over Hell's Half Acre just to find us a place to spend some money.
That's what I was thinking. You been to Dorena before?
Yeah, once. A long time ago.
Well, I never been there. What's the best way to get there from here?
It's just on the other side of that range of hills there. We should be there by noon. The first thing I'm going to do when we get there is get me a big piece of apple pie with cheese on top.
You just give me an idea about what I am to get me.
What is that?
A cold piece of pie and hot piece of ass.
The sun was high in the sky as Fargo and Ford reached Dorena. A small hand-painted sign on the outer edge of the town read,
Dorena, population 515. Come grow with us.
No railroad served the town, and its single street was dotted liberally with horse apples. At either end of the street, as well as in the middle, planks were laid from one side to the other to allow people to cross over when the street was filled with mud. The buildings of the little town were just as washed out and fly-blown up close as they had seemed from some distance. The first structure they rode by was a blacksmith shop. That was at the east end of town on the north side of the street. Across the street from the blacksmith shop on the south side of the street was a butcher shop, then a general store and a bakery. Next were a couple of small houses, then a leather shop next door to an apothecary. A set of outside stairs climbed the left side of the drugstore to a small stoop that stuck out from the second floor. A sign with a painted hand that had a finger pointing up read,
Roy McGuire, M.D.
Next to the apothecary was the sheriff's office and jail, then the bank, a barbershop and bathhouse, then a hotel. On the north side of the street, next to the blacksmith shop, was a gunsmith shop, then a newspaper office, then a cafe, then several houses, followed by a seamstress shop, then a stage depot, the brown dirt saloon, several more houses, then the stable, which was directly across from the hotel. Fargo pointed to the cafe.
There. Let's go in there and get us something good to eat.
All right.
The two men cut their horses to the side of the street toward the cafe, then dismounted and tied them off at the hitching rail.
Yeah.
When they stepped inside the building, some of the patrons reacted visibly to the filth and stench of the two visitors. They found a table and sat down. A man and woman who were sitting at a table next to him got up and moved to another table.
What you reckon got into them folks?
Well, I guess they don't like a company.
A man wearing an apron came up to him.
You gentlemen just coming into town, are you?
Yeah, and we're hungry as bears. What you got to eat?
Oh, we have a lot of good things, but being as you just came in off the trail, perhaps you would enjoy your meal better if you cleaned up first. There's a bathhouse just across the street.
Yeah, we've seen it, but we're hungry. We'll eat first, and then we'll go take us a bath.
Go take a bath first. Trust me, you will enjoy your meal much more.
How do you know?
Because in your present condition, you are offensive to my other customers, and I don't intend to serve you until you have cleaned up.
The hell you say?
The waiter turned away from the table and started back toward the kitchen.
Look here, mister, don't you walk away while I'm talking to you.
Fargo reached across and grabbed Ford's hand, preventing him from drawing.
You don't want to do that, Ford.
I ain't going to let no son of a bitch talk to me like that.
Come on. Let's go take a bath. Our money ain't gonna do us no good if we're in jail.
You heard what
Come on! We'll board our horses and take a bath.
As the two left the livery, they saw a crowd of people gathered in front of the hardware store about halfway down the street.
Hey, what do you reckon that's all about?
I don't know. What do you say we go down there and take a look?
Yeah, all right.
The two men started down the street toward the hardware store, but they stopped when they got close enough to see what everyone was looking at.
I'll be damned. That's old Dooley up there in that pine box.
It sure as hell is.
How'd he wind up there?
It tells you right there on the sign they got hanging around his neck.
What does the sign say?
It says he was killed by a fella named Bill Kirby.
Bill Kirby? I never heard of no Bill Kirby, have you?
Can't say as I have. What for do you think this fella Kirby killed him?
I don't know. Says on the sign that Dooley killed a deputy sheriff, then this Kirby fella killed him.
Ford studied the corpse for a long moment.
What you looking at?
Hell, the son of a bitch is even uglier dead than he was while he was alive.
He isn't that, ain't he? Wonder where at is his share of the money.
He probably spent it already.
He couldn't have spent it this fast.
And he must have hit it.
Well, what do you say we hang around town long enough to find out just what happened? The son of a bitch got most of the money. Now he ain't even around to spend it. What do you say we find it and spend it for him?
Yeah, I would like that.
When Sally, Pearlie, and Cal rode into Aetna, they saw a gallows in the middle of the street, just in front of the marshal's office. A rope was dangling from the gibbet, the noose at the end ominous looking.
Kind of gives you the chills looking at it, don't it? I mean, knowing it was for smoke?
It wasn't used, so it doesn't bother me.
Where do we start?
Why don't you two go down to the saloon and see what you can find out? I'll check in with the marshal's office.
You want me and Cal to go on down to the saloon?
Yes. Smoke always says you can find out more about what's going on in a saloon than you can from the local paper.
Yes, ma'am. I've heard him say that lots of times. All right. Me and Cal will go on down there and see what we can find out. We'll all get together later.
Pearlie and Cal continued to ride on down to the saloon, while Sally reined up in front of the office, dismounted, then went inside. A man with a badge was sitting at the desk, dealing poker hands to himself. He looked up as she entered.
Something I can do for you, little lady?
Are you Marshal Turnbull?
No, I'm his deputy. The name is Pike.
Where can I find Marshal Turnbull?
What for do you need him? I told you, I'm his deputy.
Pike moved around to the front of the desk to stand uncomfortably close to Sally.
You want anything done? Why, all you gotta do is just ask.
All right. I want you to tell me where I can find Marshal Turnbull.
I'll tell you what.
Pike put his hand on Sally's shoulder.
Maybe, if you'd be nice to me, I'll be nice to you.
Pike moved his hand down to her breast. Pearlie and Cal stepped up to the bar and ordered a beer apiece. When they were delivered, they both took a long Adam's apple bobbing drink.
Well, you're pretty thirsty, cowboy.
We rode a long way today.
Well, I don't make you thirsty, all right.
Well, say, we noticed the gallows out in the street as we came into town. You folks about to have a hanging?
Well, we thought we was. But the fellow we was going to hang, a man by the name of Kirby Jensen, he got away.
How'd he do that?
Hey, Marshal Turnbull, there's two fellas want to know how Jensen got away.
Ain't nobody's business how he got away.
Pearlie and Cal turned toward the man who had answered the bartender. They saw a big man filling a chair that was tipped back against the wall. He was wearing a tan buckskin vest over a red shirt. The star of his office was nearly covered by the vest, though it could be seen. Pearlie grabbed his beer and started back to talk to the marshal. Cal followed him.
Mind if we join you?
It's free country. What can I do for you?
We're looking for Smoke Jensen.
Who?
Kirby Jensen.
Ain't we all? What do you want him for?
We don't want him for nothing. He's our friend.
Your friend, huh? Well, mister, your friend robbed a bank and killed our banker.
Was he caught in the act of robbing the bank?
Near about.
Turnbull explained how he and the posse found Smoke out on the prairie.
There were some of them empty wrappers, likes used to bind up money, on the ground around him. And they was marked Bank Aetna. Besides which, he was still wearing the same plaid shirt he was wearing when he robbed the bank.
Plaid shirt? Smoke ain't got no plaid shirts. He don't even like plaid.
Yeah? Well, he was wearing one when he robbed the bank, and he was wearing that same shirt when we caught him.
Did he confess to robbing the bank?
No. Said he was set up out in the prairie by the ones who actually done it. And one of them changed shirts with him.
But you don't believe him?
It wasn't just me that didn't believe him. Your friend was tried legal before a judge and jury and found guilty.
Did you think to send a telegram back to Rio Grande County to check with Sheriff Carson?
We couldn't. Telegraph line was down.
If the line was down, how is it that you was able to send a telegram a few days ago saying that Smoke had escaped?
You fellas deputies to Sheriff Carson?
We ain't regular deputies, but we've been deputies from time to time. So I'll repeat my question. How is it that you could send a telegram after he escaped, but you didn't think to send one to check on him?
They got a line put up that we was able to use.
If you had just waited, I think the sheriff would have told you that Smoke couldn't have done what you said he'd done.
Let me ask you this. Is it true that Jensen is bad in debt? He's about to lose his ranch?
He owes some money, yes. But he wasn't about to lose the ranch. He was going to Denver to make arrangements to lease Sugarloaf out for the money that he needed.
That's what you say. But sometimes folks change, especially if they get desperate.
Well, how'd Smoke escape?
What do you mean, how did he escape? He escaped, that's all. I had him in jail, and then when I come back to jail the next morning, he's gone.
Was there anyone guarding him while he was in jail?
Yeah, my deputy was. Why?
Well, a few minutes ago, you said that Smoke robbed your bank and killed a banker. But you didn't say anything about him killing your deputy.
I didn't say that, because he didn't kill him.
If Smoke is the killer you think he is, don't you think he would have killed the deputy when he was getting away?
What? I don't know. Maybe he would have.
Marshal, we brung Miss Jensen with us. Would you like to meet her?
What do I want to meet her for?
Well, she rode a long way to get here, Marshal. Wouldn't hurt you to meet her.
All right, I'll meet her. Where is she, at the hotel?
We left her down at your office. She might still be there.
Oh, damn, I hope she didn't tell Pike who she is.
Pike?
Pike's my deputy. He's dumb as dirt, and he was... Well, he was...
He was what?
He was riding Jensen pretty hard when he was in jail. Carrying on about how he's gonna go back to Jensen's ranch and tell his widow firsthand what happened to him.
That would be all the more reason for Smoke to kill your deputy, wouldn't it? But he didn't do it, did he?
No, he didn't. But now I'm worried about that woman down there being with Pike. There's no telling what that dumb son of a bitch might do if he knows who she is.
Might do?
To Mrs. Jensen. What is it? What's so funny?
What's funny is you worrying about Miss Sally.
When Pearly, Cal, and Turnbull stepped into Turnbull's office a few minutes later, they saw Sally sitting at the desk, calmly dealing out hands of cards. She looked up and smiled.
Hello, Pearly, Cal. And you must be Marshal Turnbull.
Yes, ma'am, I am. I'm sorry you had to wait here all alone. My deputy was supposed to be here.
Oh, he is here.
He is? Where?
I'm afraid Mr. Pike was a bad boy, so I had to put him in jail.
Looking toward the jail cell for the first time, Turnbull saw Pike handcuffed to the bed. His socks had been stuffed into his mouth once again.
I'm sorry about sticking his socks in his mouth like that, but his language was atrocious. I just didn't care to listen to it anymore.
Fargo and Ford were in adjacent bathtubs. They had agreed to spend some of their money on new duds, so a representative of the mercantile store came to the bathhouse to show some of the clothes the store carried. He was standing alongside the two tubs, displaying his shirts now.
Them's just ordinary work shirts. Ain't you got nothing fancier than that?
Like Fargo, Ford was wearing his hat, even though he was in the tub. And, like Fargo, he was smoking a cigar.
Well, these are very good shirts, sir.
I was just looking for something a little fancier is all.
We only had one dress shirt in stock, and the merchants all went together to buy it in a suit of clothes for Deputy Clayton to wear for his funeral.
Oh, yes, that's the man Bill Kirby shot, ain't it?
No, Mr. Kirby shot the man who shot the deputy. Dooley, his name was, Ebenezer Dooley.
Do you know this here fella, Bill Kirby? Does he live here in town?
I don't know him. I believe he's just passing through. He has a room down at the hotel.
Hand me that bottle of whiskey.
Will you gentlemen be making a purchase then?
Yeah.
Fargo pointed to the pile of dirty clothes they'd been wearing.
I tell you what, you take them old ones and leave us the new ones, and we'll call it an even trade.
I beg your pardon, sir.
I was just funning you.
Fargo reached down on the floor beside the tub and picked up a billfold. Then he took out some money and handed it to the clerk.
Yeah, this here ought to do it.
Yes, thank you.
And you can also have the old clothes.
Want me to take the old clothes and do what with them, sir?
Do anything you want with them. Clean them up and wear them if you want to. Or burn them.
Burn them, yes. Thank you, I'll do that. I'll take care of them for you.
After the clerk very carefully and hygienically collected the old clothes, he wrapped them in the packing material and then left the bathhouse.
Did you see the way he got into a piss suit when you told him you wanted to trade even for them duds?
Yeah. He was so old maidish the way he was handling them clothes, I should have made him put them on and wear them out of here.
Ford lifted his arm and began rubbing the bar of soap against his armpit.
Hey, Fargo. How do you figure we ought to go about looking for Dooley's money?
Well, we could start by going over to the hotel where he was staying at and looking through his room.
Like they're going to let some strangers look through his room.
We ain't strangers. We're Dooley's brothers.
What? No, we ain't.
We are if we say we are, and who's going to know the difference?
Oh. Oh.
$500.
Yes, sir. Turns out I was right. I had heard Dooley's name before. There's a reward poster on my wall right now offering $500 for anyone who kills or captures him. By rights, that money should go to you. Unless you have something against taking bounty money.
No, believe me, I don't have anything against it.
Well, then, if you hang around town for another 24 hours, I'll have authorization from the governor's office to pay you the reward.
Thanks. You got a nice, friendly town here. I don't mind staying another 24 hours.
Ford had just finished eating. A plate filled with denuded chicken bones told the story of the meal he'd just consumed. In addition to fried chicken, mashed potatoes, biscuits, and gravy, he'd also eaten two large pieces of apple pie, each piece topped by melted cheese.
Let's go get drunk.
Oh, not yet. First things first.
Yeah? What could possibly come before getting drunk?
Finding the money.
Oh, yeah. So, where do we start?
We start at the hotel.
Will that be all, gentlemen?
Yeah.
And don't you both look so nice now that you're all cleaned up?
Using a towel, the waiter bent over Ford and began to brush out his shirt.
Here, what are you doing?
I'm just brushing away a few of the crumbs. It is part of the service one performs when one is in a position to receive gratuities.
Receive what?
Gratuities.
What is that?
Tips.
I don't know what you are talking about.
Oh, well, then, let me explain, sir. It is customary in a place like this that when one provides a service that is satisfactory, the customer will leave a gratuity, that is, leave some money as a gift, as a token of his appreciation for that service.
What you're saying is, you expect us to give you some money above the cost of the meal. Is that it?
Yes, sir. I'm glad you understand, sir. 10% is customary.
A gratuity?
Yes, sir.
But that's not part of the bill, is it? I mean, if we don't leave you anything, that's not against the law.
Oh, no, sir, not at all. That's why it's called a gratuity.
Well, if the law don't say I've got to, I ain't going to. Come on, Ford. We've got work to do.
Goodbye, gentlemen.
The waiter watched him until they stepped out into the street. Then the smile left his face.
Cheap bastards.
Fargo and Ford were standing in front of the registration desk at the hotel.
Would you tell me what room Mr. Ebenezer Dooley is staying in? He's her brother.
The clerk blinked a few times in surprise.
I beg your pardon? Who are you asking for?
Mr. Ebenezer Dooley. We was all supposed to meet up here in this hotel today, and we figured he'd be down here in the lobby waiting for us by now, but he ain't here.
Oh, dear, this is very awkward.
Ain't nothing awkward about it. He's our brother and he's expecting us. Tell you what, just give me the key and we'll go wake him up our own selves.
You haven't heard, have you?
We ain't heard what? What are you talking about? Look, just give us the key so we can go wake up our brother and then we can get on our way.
I'm talking about your... about Mr. Dooley. I can't believe you haven't heard yet.
Well, what's there to hear?
I'm sorry to have to tell you gentlemen this, but... Mr. Dooley was killed last night.
Killed? Did you hear that, Ford? Our brother was killed.
That's real bad.
Oh, how was he killed? What happened?
He was involved in a shootout. It seems that your brother killed our deputy sheriff, then he was killed himself.
Oh, Mama ain't going to like this, is she, Ford?
No, she ain't going to like it.
You can, view your brother down the street if you'd like. His remains are on display in the window of the hardware store.
What kind of town is this that they would put our brother in the window for everyone to gape at?
Believe me, sir, it wasn't my doing.
Whereat's our brother's things? We'll just get them and be on our way.
Your brother's things?
His saddlebags or suitcase or anything he might have had with him. I want to take them back to Mama. You got them down here?
No, they are still in the room. I'm waiting for the sheriff to tell me it's all right to take them out.
What's the sheriff got to do with it? I told you we're his brothers. If Brother Eb still got some things in his room, then we're the ones should get them, not the sheriff.
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure about this.
Well, just give me the key to his room. We'll go up there and have a look around our own selves.
Sir, how do I know you are his brother?
How do you know? Because I told you I am his brother.
Well, just the fact that you tell me, that doesn't validate it.
Doesn't what?
Doesn't prove it.
Well, hell, why didn't you say you needed proof? Ford, tell him I'm Dooley's brother.
Yes, sir, he's Dooley's brother, all right.
And Ford is his brother, too. So there, you've got all the proof you need.
That's not really proof, just the two of you vouching for each other. Maybe we should wait for the sheriff. I could send for him if you like.
Tell you what, my brother had a drooping eye right here. Now, how would I know that if I wasn't actually his brother?
Very well, Mr. Dooley. This goes against my better judgment, but go on up there and look around if you must.
Thanks.
Fargo took the key, and then he and Ford went up to the room. Dooley's saddlebags were hanging over a hook that stuck out from the wall. Fargo grabbed the bags and dumped the contents onto the bed. One shirt, one pair of denim trousers, a pair of socks, and a pair of long underwear tumbled out.
Pull all them drawers and have a look.
Fargo started pulling out the drawers from the single chest. Finding nothing, Fargo stripped the bed. Then he turned the straw-stuffed mattress upside down.
Oh, nothing here! Not a damn thing!
Ford started to put the drawers back in the chest.
What are you doing?
Putting these back.
To hell with them! Just leave them! We can't be wasting no more time here.
When the two men came back downstairs, the clerk looked up. He was surprised to see that they weren't carrying anything with them.
You didn't find his saddlebags?
We found them, but there weren't nothing there that Mama would want.
What do we do now?
I don't know. I figure for sure he would have had the money hid out in his room somewhere.
Maybe he had it with him and the Undertaker took it.
Good idea. Let's go down there and talk to him.
You think the Undertaker would keep the money if he found it?
Well, we'll soon find out.
Gene Prufrock, the Undertaker, had done nothing to prepare the outlaw's body but wash the shirt and then put him in a pine box. He didn't like the idea of making a public show of the dead, no matter how despicable a person he might have been. So when the sheriff asked him to stand Dooley's body up in the hardware store window, Prufrock tried to talk him out of it. But the sheriff prevailed, and Dooley's body was now on display. It was a different story with Gideon Clayton, though. The young deputy had been very popular among the citizens of the town, and Prufrock was taking his time to do as good a job as he possibly could. Several of the merchants had gotten together to buy a special coffin for Clayton. It was finished with a highly polished black lacquer and fitted with silver adornments. Those same merchants had also bought him a suit, so that Gideon Clayton's body lay on Prufrock's preparation table, dressed in a suit and tie that he had never worn in his life. The Undertaker made the final touches, combing Clayton's hair and powdering and rouging his cheeks. Prufrock had just stepped back to admire his work when he was suddenly surprised by the entry of two men.
Is there something I can do for you, gentlemen?
Yeah, we want to ask you some questions.
Could the questions wait? As you see, I'm working on a subject.
Is that what you call them? Subjects? Why don't you just call them what they are? Dead meat.
I'm sorry, sir, but I do not find your joke at all funny. I believe very strongly in maintaining the dignity of the departed.
I hear that when somebody dies, you take all the blood out of them. Is that true?
Yes.
What do you do that for?
So we can replace the blood with embalming fluid. It preserves the body.
What do you do with the blood?
We dispose of it. Gentlemen, please, I don't like people back here. Is there something I can do for you?
Who is this fellow you're working on here? Was he rich or something?
No. Why would you think he's rich?
Well, look at him. He's all decked out in a new suit. And I'm looking at the real pretty coffin over there and figuring you're about to put him in it. Is that right?
That's right.
Then he must have been rich.
He wasn't rich. He was just well-respected. He was our deputy sheriff.
Your deputy sheriff, huh? So what you were saying is that this is a man our brother killed?
Good heavens. Mr. Dooley is your brother?
Yeah.
The mortuary was in the same building as the hardware store, but behind it. Fargo pointed toward the front.
The man you have standing up in that window out there, showing him off like a trussed-up hog, is our brother. Is that what you mean when you say you like to maintain the dignity of the departed? Our brother is a departed, ain't he? Whereat's his dignity?
I'm sorry. I don't think anyone knew that he had kin in town.
Well, we just come into town this morning. Didn't find out about our brother until we saw him standing there in that store window for all the world to see.
I'm terribly sorry about your brother.
Yes, well, like I say, he was our brother. So that means that anything you found on him is rightly ourn.
I beg your pardon?
His belongings. Everything he had on him is rightly ourn now. Well, except he can keep them clothes on he's a-wearing. Wouldn't want to have him show up in hell buck naked.
That'd be funny, all right. Old Dooley walking around in hell naked as a jaybird.
Dooley?
What?
You called him Dooley.
Well, hell, that's his name. What else am I supposed to call him?
It's just that within the family, people normally use first names.
Yeah, well, Eb being the oldest was just always called Dooley. Now, what about his belongings? Do you have any of them here?
Well, of course, there's his gun and his boots. Only other thing he had was the clothes he was wearing. But, of course, you have already indicated that you don't want those.
What about the money?
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. That will be $5.
$5? That's all he had on him was $5?
You misunderstand, sir. He had less than $1 on him. The $5 is what you owe me.
Why the hell should I owe you anything?
You did say that he was your brother, did you not? That means that someone owes me for the preparation of his body. As you two gentlemen are his next of kin, you are responsible for his funeral.
As far as I'm concerned, he ain't gonna have no funeral. We may be his next of kin, but you ain't gonna get no money from us.
Then what do you propose that I do about burying your brother?
What would you do about burying him if I hadn't come along today?
He would be declared an indigent, and I would collect the fee from the town council. Of course, that would also mean that he will be buried in a pauper's grave.
Well, that's fine with me. Go ahead and get your money from the town. Come on, Ford, let's go.
Aren't you even interested in when and where he's to be buried?
No.
The only place we ain't looked yet is the stable. Are we going to tell the fella watching the stable that Dooley was our brother?
Oh, no. Dooley owes any money for boarding his horse, the son of a bitch might try to make us pay.
And how are we going to look?
We'll just have to find another way.
Fargo and Ford hung around the stable until they saw the stable attendant go into the corral to start putting out feed for the outside horses. Then the men slipped into the barn.
You know his horse, don't you?
Yeah, sure, I know his horse.
Well, we'll just look around until we see whichever horse is his.
The two men started looking into the stalls.
There he is. I'd recognize that horse just about anywhere.
Opening the door, they stepped inside. Then Fargo picked up a pitchfork and handed it to Ford.
Well, get to work.
Get to work doing what? What's this here pitchfork for?
Start mucking around the straw and make sure he don't have it hid there.
Yeah, well, while I'm shoveling straw and crap, what are you going to do?
I'm going to look at his saddle and blanket roll.
How come you get to look into his saddle while I have to muck around in the straw and horse crap?
Well, let's just wait here.
Ford began tossing the straw aside while Fargo examined the saddle. Finding nothing there, he unrolled the blanket. When his search of the blanket turned up nothing, he stuck his hand down into the empty rifle sheath.
Ha! I feel something here. I think this is it.
Ford tossed the pitchfork aside and hurried over to watch Fargo as he retrieved a bag. But as soon as he brought the bag out for a closer examination, his smile changed to a frown.
What the hell? The bag is empty. There ain't no money here.
Well, where is it? Somebody's got it. He wouldn't have just kept an empty bag.
Bill Kirby.
Who?
The man they say shot Dooley. His name is Bill Kirby. And I'd bet you $100 to a horseshoe that he's the one that got the money.
So what do we do now?
We find the son of a bitch.